This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Breadline from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union on Community Radio 3CR.
News and views from the dole queues.
Fighting back against the poverty machine.
Breadline is broadcast from the stolen, unceded lands of the Wurundjeri people. The unfairness of the so-called welfare system disproportionately affects Indigenous people.
Down with mutual obligations.
Raise the rate.
Fair and equal treatment for all. And welcome to Breadline, as it says in the intro. So we're the weekly show on wonderful 3CR community radio of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And so I'm presenting today. My name's Jessica, and I'm happy to have also in the studio Judy McVeigh, who's a retired member of the Commonwealth Public Servants Union.
Hi.
Hi, Judy.
Good to be here.
And so we're going to be talking today about our action on Friday, last Friday, which was to remember Josh Park Fing. So as you might know, if you've been listening as a regular to the show, Josh Park Fing sadly passed away 10 years ago on a Work for the Dole site in Toowoomba, where he was expected to collect rubbish, basically, which, of course, as we know, is rubbish because that it's supposedly training, but they were just using him as cheap labour, free labour to collect rubbish. And unfortunately, he was expected to rest on a trailer which was being pulled by a tractor, and so it jolted him off. And sadly, he passed away from head injuries. So every year we do remember Josh Park Fing, and we actually, one of us had actually contacted his family to say we'll be doing the action last Friday. And yeah, considering all the other pressures everyone has, it went pretty well. The funny thing was, we had, of course, our letter all prepared to hand in to the Minister for Skills and Training, Andrew Giles, and it was all lovely and ready and printed out and everything. But when we arrived, the roller doors were down, and basically, as I said outside, I think that I couldn't imagine an office more hermetically sealed against the population. So we still had speeches, and we still marked his death, and also made our point about the fact that Work for the Dole is a complete joke. A very small number of people actually get jobs out of that, out of the Work for the Dole participation. It's compulsory. We know from the inside that workers who take on a job with the privatised job networks are told, just keep them busy. And you know, then after 6 months, if they get a job, they'll get a job themselves. We don't have to worry much. Just then put them on Work for the Dole. So as I said before on the show, it's sort of the modern equivalent of digging holes and filling them in again. And we've had enough. The point that we made also, and Judy made it in her speech, was about the fact that it's a Howard era brainwave. Do you want to talk a bit about that, Judy?
Yes. Well, I was working for the Department of Social Security and then the CES, the Commonwealth Employment Service. They were privatised under Howard. I mean, you'll know that the DSS became Centrelink. It's not privatised, I suppose, but CES is no more. The Commonwealth Employment Service used to be a public service that looked for jobs for people, that helped people enter employment. It wasn't about the kind of system we've got today where private companies are making money out of the vulnerability of unemployed people.
Yeah, and also punish them by suspending their benefits and in some cases completely and getting rid of their benefits. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, it's a crisis for people who are unemployed, I think, because, I mean, obviously there's always a shortage of jobs for people looking for work. There's always going to be some unemployment. But they should not be that there is you know, the brunt of some kind of profiteering.
Yeah, that's right. It shouldn't be a process of profit making to actually help people. And yeah, we often say basically the job service providers are them getting jobs. They've got jobs for themselves, but they're not actually helping. And of course, once a year we do give a little award to the worst job centre in our understanding, because it is possible through FOI to get the stats of the companies which are actually cutting more people off.
Yeah, I think it's worthwhile knowing that work for the dole too was sort of gradually made worse and worse through the 1980s and the 1990s. And then under privatisation, well, there's an incentive for those private companies to treat their clients badly. So the Howard government sort of carried on and deepened some policies of the previous Labor Party governments. So that's what enabled Howard to so easily privatise something like the Commonwealth Employment Service. Now, our union, the Community and Public Sector Union, is campaigning right now for a return of the Commonwealth Employment Service. They're not doing a lot of campaigning. They're fairly quiet. You don't hear much from them. But the Labor Party government has said that they support a return of the Commonwealth Employment Service as well. But look what we've got, you know, a Howard-era policy. And the current Labor government, you know, ruling in a period where we've got very, very serious cost of living crisis, and they're not even looking at this issue seriously. So I don't know what's going to happen to unemployed people. We've got a housing crisis. People can't find anywhere to live. It's a terrible situation.
Yeah, and what we talk about a lot on Breadline is just people hanging on in quiet desperation. And that's unfortunately the case, and that's why it's quite hard even to start organising, because people are coping with multiple health issues. People don't realise, if they're not aware of how the so-called welfare system works now, that a lot of people are unwell and they're expected to look for jobs, for example. And then there's the whole problem of dealing with the digital nightmare, which is MyGov, etc., which I noticed in the last couple of days, people are getting told, oh, there's a glitch at the moment, so you won't be able to get through to MyGov. That seems to happen fairly regularly too. So yeah, the actual protest, I was pretty happy with the fact that quite a few of us turned up. There were other people who are active unionists. There were some of our members. One of our members took a lot of great photos, and he's actually hoping to at some point become a photographer, I think. So it was great to see him using skills there. And we had one very young representative. He had his first go on the megaphone. So yeah, I think the other things that happened was we got some good media actually in Toowoomba. It was the front page of the Toowoomba Chronicle, the story of Josh Park Fing. I'm really glad that happened. And again, that's thanks to the support of people like the Anti-Poverty Centre, who made sure the media release went out pretty far, which is not one of my great skills at the moment. I haven't got an up-to-date media list. And also... Penny Allman Payne, who's quite a supportive Greens member, I think she's a senator, yeah, she did a good post about it. Then we had a few comments after I posted some photographs on our Australian Unemployed Workers Union Facebook page. And so this one person said, I call work for the dole a class war. This guy's death from breathtaking contempt and indifference and taking welfare off already poor people was a slow-moving death, not dissimilar to Warsaw ghettos by Liberal Party Nazis. So, yeah, strong words there. And then someone else commented, I'm actually not surprised he closed his office, shows him up as a coward and also showing himself as knowing full well what his intentions are. So work for the dole is the dole besides Liberal, someone else commented, yeah. Work for the dole is the dole beside Liberal propaganda spewed forth by Howard the failure. Another comment, there's never been any kind of social security called the dole, so why do people use the term? It's creepy and vile as a customer being charged to consume with no resistance. And then the fifth comment was, I dislocated my hip at work for the dole and then proceeded to get breached for missing a day. Ooh, that sounds painful. And someone else mentioned that someone nearly fell into a septic tank, yeah, while doing work for the Dole. As we know, also Jeremy, who is in the anti-poverty centre, his job, again, wonderful training, was to basically clean up the cemetery in Ballarat. So, yes, again, people still have this fantasy that work for the Dole will be this amazing thing where the unemployed person is welcomed in and escorted around the place and, you know, shown all these opportunities for future work, and that's not the case. Should mention in Wonthaggi as well, I have mentioned it before on the show, the community house was going to bring in work for the Dole. And they realised, I think, that having small numbers of people actually working in the community house, they'd have to pretty much full-time have someone to train someone. And also I put some strong arguments against it there. And also we did manage to close down a little workshop which was proposing to make furniture out of pallets. And that was a Work for the Dole scheme, which we heard had really terrible conditions with wood dust flying around in this. It wasn't a properly set up workshop, basically. So, yeah, that was thanks to a local councillor who was coming to our meeting. So, yeah, and we have heard rumours that some of the local councils in Melbourne are using Work for the Dole participants, I suppose that official name would be. So, yeah, there'll be more on this, I think, in this space.
Well, it was good to be involved in the action. It was great. We're in a really busy shopping centre area in Thomastown, so people are hearing the speeches and talking to us. But we also got to talk about the relationship between both sides of the counter, like the unemployed and the people in my union, the CPSU. Those people don't always know the results of the policies of the government. Some do, some don't. There's always been activists in the union who are very concerned about the state of, the level of the Dole, or unemployed benefits they used to be called, and as well things like Work for the Dole. So there's always been protests inside these government departments about the way the government policies treat you call them customers these days, but we used to call them clients and the unemployed. So I would like to explain that it's important that workers do understand what's happening, but also that people who are unemployed recognise that the people on the other side of the counter, the workers, tend to be unionists in the public sector, and they support human rights, they support better wages. Where at the moment, the CPSU is fighting for improvements in their enterprise bargain. As well, later in the year, there's going to be a union election, and I'm helping with the reform group in the union called Democracy for CPSU. We'll be standing in the union election, and we'll be putting forward ideas for having a better union. And one of the things that my comrades in the union always have supported is the rights of unemployed people. So Work for the Dole is something that we would like to see common cause, you know. We could help each other, people on both sides of the welfare counter.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's really good to hear. And I've read out statements from the CPSU in the past on the show. It just sort of makes you feel as if there's some humanity on the other side. And I know that at one point we had someone on the show who was working on the phone lines. That's when they employed quite a few extra people because they got bad publicity about the wait times and so on. So I think that's something for people to remember, that, you know, that when you get a human on the other end, it really does, yeah, help your day. Of course, the technical problems, like I mentioned before, about systems going down and being kept waiting a long time, they're another thing that needs to be sorted out.
Well, it was great when When this current Labor government first came in, they actually increased the number of staff because the Liberals had really run things down. And Peter Dutton actually campaigned in the last election to reduce the size of the public service.
Incredible.
Yeah. When the Labor Party said, no, this is not on. However, I think people have to be aware right now, cost of living crisis, there's a budget coming up. There are a lot of jobs going to go across the public service because there's talk of redundancies, there's talk of austerity, the necessary austerity in a cost of living crisis. It's crazy. But public servants could be the brunt of serious cutbacks.
Ooh.
So that's another thing to consider, and that's going to reduce any kind of service that we should be giving to people on welfare.
Mm, good point. Yep. Oh, well, we'll go to a bit of a reminder to that we've got wonderful community legal services that can help you if you have a legal problem with Centrelink or debt and so on. Here it is.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
And, yeah, you're back with Breadline from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And I usually do a bit of a reminder that we do run our own advocacy line. Since last November, we've been running it Monday to Friday from 10 till 2. So we have a phone number that you can ring if you are having trouble, and you'll get to talk to one of us, one of our union volunteers. So the number is 1-800-289-848. Or 9811-7064, or you can just email advocacy@auwu.org.au. And, yeah, so I'm here in the studio with Judy from the CP, who's a retired member of the CPSU, and we've got a bit of, I'll read out a bit of the letter that we were attempting to present to the Minister for Skills and Training when we were outside his office. We were hoping we might be able to just go in there and give him a bit of a letter, but that didn't happen. That was the Minister, Andrew Giles. So this is just a bit of background in case listeners might not have heard about Josh Parkfing. Josh Parkfing was only 18 years old when he was killed at a Work for the Dole site at the Toowoomba Showground. Josh was forced to do cleaning work on the 245-acre site without the necessary training, guidance, supervision or pay. Work for the Dole participants are not paid for their work. A $10.40 per week travel allowance, which hasn't been increased since it was introduced in the late 90s, is all they receive on top of the paltry job seeker payment. The travel allowance equates to as little as 41 cents per hour for people working 25 hours a week unpaid and would cover the cost of about 5 litres of fuel needed for up to 10 trips to and from a Work for the Dole site. Yeah, so good point there. So like many Work for the Dole participants today, Josh was unlawfully coerced into this activity by his Unemployment Services Compliance Officer. They did not inform him of his right that he could choose an alternative activity to meet the compulsory activity requirements, which we know as mutual obligations, nor did they bother to report the back injury he sustained on the site before his eventual death. Since Josh's death, advocates have worked with countless welfare recipients who have been unfairly punished, injured and tormented by this forced unpaid labour program. So, I don't want to sort of go on for too long about reading out, but we know that they have also kept completely silent on the number of injuries that have happened on Work for the Dole sites. So really the pressure is on them. We know also, that not many people get jobs through this system. And we know that through the privatised job networks, only around 11% of the participants actually get a job through the companies, whereas and the companies themselves, we know internally say, oh, people will get themselves a job. That's not really our thing. So, and of course, the scandal a few years ago that the Unemployed Workers Union was involved with was when the privatised job networks get a payout if they can supply the 12 work payment slips, pay slips from at 12 weeks. And so they actually visited, it was a father of an Australian Unemployed Workers Union member at home and tried to entice him to hand over the pay slips by offering him a $50 gift card. But there've been many cases of this whole pay slips fiasco because, again, they're privatised and they've got to get the workers in the privatised agencies are told they've got to get these out of people. So, we were going to talk a little bit more because Judy and I were both involved with the Civil Liberties Campaign in the 70s under Bjelke Petersen in Brisbane. And we were just going to sort of reflect on some of the things that are happening at the moment. Very, very topical because I think on the weekend around 20 people were arrested in Brisbane for purely maybe having a placard saying "From the River to the Sea" or one of the other banned phrases.
Well, that's right, 20 people arrested for saying something. You know, they're policing our ideas, they're policing...
Yeah, policing words, illegal words.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jessica and I were both facing... It was a different kind of situation. Bjelke Petersen banned street marches. So students first protested and they got support from workers and eventually thousands of people would go into King George Square and demand the right to be able to march legally in the streets. Even then you had to apply for a permit, but Bjelke Petersen made a statement saying, don't bother applying now, the day of the political street march is over. I mean, obviously it was wrong about that because never before had there been such large street marches over political issues, which took place between 1977 and 1979. And at one stage, 418 people were arrested on one day. And I think Jessica and I are both part of that in the Watch House.
The police didn't quite know how – they didn't really have the capacity to deal with such large numbers. And there was the classic case of when they put everyone in a garage with a roller door to lock up, which was a normal place where that they kept their trucks, I think. And so, of course, the roller door, they didn't shut, so people got out afterwards. So it was pretty embarrassing for them. But, I think, again, the dictatorial leader, we're all familiar with the ones that we won't even bother mentioning over in the US, but dictatorial leaders see any kind of rebellion as a sort of challenge to their authority and their power. And so they thought by having... a police force that would do their bidding, they could actually stifle the protest, but it actually grew,
Yeah, because at the time, Bjelke Petersen was, he's running a state where mining was very important and uranium mining was starting to be found in Australia and very important for building a nuclear power industry as well as nuclear weapons. So there are a number of companies who are interested in making sure uranium got mined in Australia. And unfortunately for them, the protest movement across Australia was anti-uranium. movement against uranium mining in Melbourne, combined with campaigning against nuclear power in Queensland and in other states, actually prevented a serious nuclear power industry being developed in Australia. Bjelke Petersen saw himself as a vanguard of those mining interests, you know, billionaires who wanted to open up the mining industry. But the protest movement said, no, we don't want that. The anti-uranium movement, which became a protest movement, said we do not want that. So Bjelke Petersen said, OK, I'm going to ban street marches. But it really blew up in his face.
Yeah.
And, you know, we pushed him back and we actually got the right to march in Queensland by the end of the 80s. Yeah.
Mm. And I found out recently just about the strength of the union campaigns against uranium export, both in Victoria and in Queensland and New South Wales as well. There was that great sort of combination of people who were just so stirred up about the idea of uranium going out, and also workers who didn't want to be handling it. And there were great examples of cooperation there down on the docks in Brisbane and I think Melbourne as well.
Yeah, definitely. People would occupy the docks, but the Maritime Union was very, very staunch about having a say over what was going to be exported through our ports. And in Queensland, when Bjelke Petersen banned street marches and the right to protest, it went hand in hand with attacks on the right of unions to organise as well. So the Seafarers Union actually said, we will strike if any of our members are fined over this street march ban. And, of course, that was a big pressure against the government. The campaign around civil liberties lasted 2 years, but by the end of about a year and a half in, there was such a strong movement supporting our campaign amongst unionists that the majority of people actually being arrested tended to be rank-and-file workers, whereas it started as a student campaign, but because we got support from the union movement, we were able to draw in not only rank-and-file workers, but their union leaders. The last rally was actually quite a spectacle. It got media up from all over Australia, and the head of the ACTU, the Australian Council of Trade Unions, actually led the march, and politicians came to Queensland to lead the march and get arrested with us. So it became a cause célèbre.
Yeah, good times. But I reckon that I was thinking of the workers who refused to handle armaments that were heading to Israel. So that just shows you again the dock workers who are actually part of the, and you know, an integral part of the sort of armed war machine, are still taking great stands. Mm. So a bit of a blast from the past here on Breadline on 3CR. And thanks, Judy, for coming in. And you'll be hearing from us next week at the same time, 6 o'clock. And stay tuned now for Eritrean Voices, which is up next. So bye from me.
And bye from me. Thanks a lot, Jessica.
Right, bye.
You see them on Saturday floating on air, painting their toenails, washing their hair. Maybe tonight it'll happen. Girls in our town, they leave school at 15, work at the counter or behind the machine, and spend asking, they probably will. 16 again. Things might get better, but it's hard to say when. If they only had someone to talk to. Girls in our town can be saucy.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.